And now on this episode of Miami Mic'd Up, as we get ready for opening day of the 2024 Marlins season, I'm pleased to welcome in for his first time on the show, Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Peter Bendix. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time right here before opening day to join me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into anything, before we get into baseball and sort of your approach to this team, this organization, I have to ask you the same question I ask everybody here on Miami Mic'd Up, which is, what is something recently outside of work that has brought you joy?
Ooh, there's been a lot of things, but really it's revolving around generally both my wife and food. And so whenever, especially during spring training, my wife was able to spend a lot of time with me up in Jupiter. And so we had a really good time exploring some of the Jupiter restaurants. So some of those meals that we had in Jupiter, either out at restaurants or even ordering in a night in, that brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I know I was lucky enough to meet your lovely wife when you had your introductory press conference down here in Miami. And it's obvious the love that you two share. In making this transition to a new organization, a new city, how much has her support and love been sort of a crucial factor for you in gaining a level of comfort on the work side of things?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, we're uprooting our life. The only life that we knew together and the only life that she knew. She's from St. Pete. So moving to a new place where we don't know anybody and taking on this challenge, it's really fun, right? This is a really exciting and great opportunity, but it's difficult and don't know anybody. Neither one of us know anybody here in Miami. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, we have each other. And so her support, her love, but her just general support for me and for us is huge.
I love that. I'm recently married myself, so I can completely relate to what you're discussing.
Congratulations.
Here. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, since that introductory press conference, obviously it's been about 4 months on the job. And when you first got here, the main thing you mentioned was, hey, I need to learn this organization. I need to learn the ins and outs of it. I need to know it up and down the same way I knew things in Tampa. So in your first 4 months or so here on the job, what have you learned about the Miami Marlins organization?
I've learned a ton, while also still feel like there's a lot to learn. You can learn so much in 4 months, right? But it's still only 4 months and it's still just an off season. I'm learning about the people, both in the front office, in the clubhouse, the coaches, the players. And I think spring training is a great opportunity to really learn about the coaches and players a lot at once and develop those relationships, kind of understand who they are as coaches, as players, but also as people. Mm. And seeing them kind of off the field, going out to dinner with them, spending time with them, playing ping pong with them, all of these different things is a really good way to get to learn who these people are, because ultimately, who they are, I need to know who they are so that I can figure out how to support them, what they need from me.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because both you and Skip Schumacher talk a lot about building relationships, whether that's, you know, with someone who works in the organization, you know, in your specific sector of the organization, or someone on the complete opposite side. So as you continue to build those relationships within the organization, I imagine Skip Schumacher is one of the most important relationships to have with the president of baseball operations down to the manager. So how have you guys worked on cultivating your relationship in this offseason to make sure that, hey, as we head into opening day, you and I are on the exact same page and have a strong relationship in year two for him as a manager, year one for you as president of baseball operations?
That is such an important relationship for both of us to have. And you need to build that relationship. You need to build that trust. You need to build that understanding and really kind of understand who he is. He needs to understand who I am, what we're trying to do, how we want to go about doing it. And it's so much of it comes down to communication. Mm. Communication style, communication frequency, what each person needs in terms of communication, even how they like to communicate. Do you like text messages? Do you like phone calls? Do you like in person? Whatever it might be. And so I think it's learning each other in that way. That started in day one for me. That started with a phone call. Then after I went out to the GM meetings my first week, I flew out to California, had dinner with Skip, and then we talked virtually every day in the off season, and certainly every day during spring training. So that communication is ongoing, that relationship building is ongoing, but it comes down to communication and then trust.
I know how much both of you talk about, you know, culture, building a culture here, and seeing what he sort of laid down last year and now what you're bringing in here, it seems like really positive things for the organization. I was intrigued. I read a piece that Christina Di Nicola did in an interview with you several months ago now. And something that was mentioned was whether it was a research paper, or an article that you wrote about Leo Mazzoni and his impact on the Braves pitching in the 90s. And all I could think was to relate that and whatever your findings were on that relationship to what you've got now here with Mel Sotomayor Jr. in this pitching staff and the way that he took a Jesus Luzardo last year and really improved upon his potential. You see now Ryan Weathers and AJ Puck coming into this season looking like sort of reborn pitchers. So I'm wondering, what were your findings back then on the Braves, the 90 staff, Leo Mazzoni, and how can you relate them to sort of the modern game with these guys who are now throwing, you know, 10 miles an hour harder than all those guys were with the Braves in the 90s?
Well, that my findings on Leo Mazzoni back in the day was basically that pitchers performed better with him, even when you compare them to themselves. So it wasn't just that he had great pitchers. It was that the pitchers themselves performed better while they were with him. And I think it really speaks to the value of a coach and of coaching and the importance of development and improvement for players, even at the major league level. These guys are not finished products when they get to the major leagues, even the ones who are good right away. There's tons of room for improvement. And that's something I saw a lot with the Rays, that player development at the major league level. And then I'm seeing it here too. And that's really important for any team, but it's especially important for us when we're always going to be having these young players that when they get to the major leagues, they still have room for improvement.
I think that's crucial. And when you talk about this roster in particular, these young pitchers, we've seen that now, whether it's Braxton Garrett, Jesus Luzardo, and these guys that continue to grow under Mel. On the offensive side of the ball, you got guys obviously to be excited about. Luis Arraez is a batting champion. Jake Berger and the power potential he showed. Obviously, Jazz Chisholm Jr. and his ability when he's on the field to really produce. So who are some of the guys that you look at when you see this roster and say, hey, that's a guy that's a cornerstone for us for the future as we continue to build this organization?
I mean, you just named a bunch of them, right? I mean, Luis Arraez, two-time batting champion, the way that he controls the bat, it looks entirely different than any other player, and it's really, really fun to watch. He's a great person. He's a very positive person and a really good teammate, everything that you're really looking for. Jazz Chisholm, one of the most talented players I've ever seen, frankly. And the fact that he's been able to do what he's done to this point in his career, almost relying on that talent, and now to see him rededicate himself to his craft in the offseason, I'm really, really excited about what he can do, especially if he's able to stay healthy, which I'm confident that he will. I think Jake Berger, the components that he has offensively are hard to find. He can hit any pitch hard, and that's a very, very difficult skill to find. Josh Bell gives a really professional at bat, switch hitter, veteran, knows what he's doing, he's hard to game plan against. And I think Nick Gordon is somebody that I'm particularly intrigued about. You know, Nick missed most of last year, but 2 years ago, he finally kind of broke through and really showed that he was a dynamic player on both sides of the ball. So if he's healthy, which it looks like he is, I'm excited what he can do.
That's a great one and a good sort of dark horse candidate for a very good season. He was our most recent Marlins guest on Miami Mic'd Up, so a nice synchronicity there. One of the guys that you recently signed was Tim Anderson. You bring him in as theoretically the everyday-ish shortstop. I know obviously this organization will do some platooning, we'll have guys in and out, and there's a lot of depth within this major league roster. But with Tim, I think it's a perfect example as a way to be able to pick your brain here in the front office's approach, right? Because Tim's had such a great career at the start of his career. Obviously last year, a down year, where in a lot of the analytics, he was toward the bottom of the league. And statistically, he was toward the bottom of the league. So as your front office sort of comes into shape here and you look at a player like Tim Anderson, what are the things that stand out for you to be able to go, yes, that's the player we should go get, and I believe he can have a turnaround season and get back to form?
Well, I think there's a few things that you look at, and it starts with the person. It starts with what happened last year, what was going on in his life, what was going on with his health, what was going on in his head to the best that you're able to understand it. And to look at his whole track record of his career, not just what happened last year. Because there's a lot of players, you can find lots of examples of players who have 5, 6, 7 really good years in a row and then a bad year. And you can say, okay, well, what happened to those guys the following year, this year for us? A lot of those guys bounced back. A lot of them bounced back to very similar levels as before. And the key thing that those guys had in common was, number one, they're not that old. right? They're not 37, 38 years old. And number two, there are some health concerns that might have contributed to the poor season, and there's reason to believe that those are behind him. Now, that is no guarantee, but you watched him during spring training. You see that he's moving really, really well, really fluidly. Some of the things that were hampering him that, frankly, he played through that other players probably wouldn't have played through, which in my opinion speaks very positively about Tim, but probably brought down his numbers in a way last year that might not be entirely fair.
I think it's wonderful to hear with a front office that we know is sort of analytically motivated to hear the way that you're talking about the human side of it. Because these guys are humans at the end of the day, every one of us are. And to sort of be able to take that into consideration when looking at a player, I think it makes a ton of sense with a guy like Tim, knowing what was going on health-wise, off-field, everything. Taking that into factor, I would love to see him have the type of year that he's had in the past in Chicago. When it comes to sort of the day-to-day, you mentioned your relationship with Skip and how you guys are communicating every day. Well, how much of, you know, the front office's impact is going to be there when it comes to whether it's making lineups or, you know, managing things like that? We know in some organizations, the front office is essentially dictating what the lineup looks like day-to-day. In others, it's all entirely up to the manager on the field. So how much of an impact do you intend to have on what this team looks like on a day-to-day basis as opposed to just the overall roster?
Well, my experience with the Rays, it was a very collaborative environment, and the front office never dictated the lineup. And that is something that I saw a lot of success with, and it's something that I believe is kind of the best way to handle things, is to collaborate, to discuss. And I think Skip loves that collaboration. He likes conversations. He likes information. Yeah, he likes to kind of best understand the circumstances. And at the end of the day, he's the manager of the team. At the end of the day, he's responsible for setting that lineup. He's responsible for figuring out the best combination of players on that given day. I think that he would be the first to tell you that in order to make the best decision, it's not just him in a vacuum. Right? It's him collaborating with me. It's him collaborating with our R&D team. It's him collaborating with his hitting coach, his pitching coach, the medical team, the strength and conditioning team, and ultimately the player himself, gathering all of that information and then setting that lineup. So I think that, to me, is kind of the best way to put it together.
I love to hear that, and that seemed to be the exact same mindset that Skip had last year. So hearing that come together is a really positive thing. I'm going to ask you one more baseball question before I wrap up with some of the fun get-to-know-you stuff, a little rapid fire. When it comes to this team, what are your general expectations? Because we know the intention to build this roster for the future, but we know that this team is coming off of a playoff appearance and has the talent to be able to get back there once again. You look at the opening day roster this year, honestly, versus last year, and you see marked improvement in what that starting lineup should look like. So what are your expectations generally for this team in 2024?
You know, I don't like to put specific expectations on any team. I do think we're going to be very competitive. I think we're going to be fun to watch. And I think there's a lot of talent on the team. Now, how it plays out, that's the fun of baseball. Who stays healthy? Who follows through on their offseason work? Who falls off? I don't know. But we have the raw talent. We have the talent in place where there's a lot of guys that are just one tweak away from really taking off. I can't predict who those guys are going to be, but I do expect that there's going to be multiple, you know, pleasant surprises on this team. And ultimately, we have a lot of great arms. If those arms are able to stay healthy, if they're able to pitch to their potential, then I think we can play with anybody.
Sky's the limit when you have the amount of arms that are in this organization. And who knows, guys like Nick Gordon, maybe having those bounce back years, Tim Anderson, same sort of deal. All right. So passion for baseball. I know it started at a young age. I read that you had put on baseball clinics when you were in like middle school. Then you get to college, and I believe you started a baseball club.
I did.
So not club baseball, but a baseball club.
Correct.
I've got to know what that looked like at Tufts University. Speakers that were coming in, conversations that are happening. You're talking about the sort of analytics community before it really took off in the aughts, you know, we're having these conversations. What did that look like while you were at Tufts? And how did your passion for baseball sort of spark all of that?
It looked primarily like speakers, of reaching out to local people in the Boston community where I went to college. And there was, we had Keith Law come.
Oh, wow.
When he was, I forget, I think he was before ESPN, or he might have been at ESPN.
Sure.
We had him come to speak. We had the local Boston Globe beat writer. We had some NESN people come to speak. And really just anybody in that community who wanted to come, you know, chat with 20, 25 of Tufts University's biggest baseball fans. And then after we kind of did that for a couple of years, we also started to do a little bit of research. And it was a really good opportunity to collaborate with a few other people and put together a research paper that ended up getting published online, and one in which I'm still teased by my former colleagues at the Rays. But ultimately, it was just a lot of people who love baseball, and that particular place, Boston in 2004, 2005, was as baseball crazed a place as you can possibly imagine.
Of course.
So there was no shortage of people who love baseball.
That's amazing. I was in a class at UCF. It was an honors seminar course called The History of Baseball and American Culture. And it was so wonderful, but it was a very different atmosphere in Orlando, Florida at the time. And I was the only like baseball dork in there, so excited for everything. Wrote a dissertation at the end of it about why all the steroid era players should be in the Hall of Fame. So a few rapid fire things and I'll let you go. Music. Who would you say are your maybe top three favorite artists? And if you were a player yourself, what would your walk-up song be?
You know, I don't know that I necessarily have a favorite artist that I could point to. My family is very musically inclined. I'm a little less so. So I just kind of put on what's ever on the radio.
Sure.
In terms of a walk-up song, boy, I think it would have to change depending on how my season is going.
I get that. Yeah, I know a lot of guys that'll superstitiously, if they get into a slump, maybe change things up. I read that you knew the Kelseys growing up, Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce. Now that you see what they're up to, first of all, are there any stories that would indicate the level of stardom that they ultimately have achieved? What did you think when you saw Jason Kelce's retirement ceremony and speech? And obviously, you know, has Travis made you a Swiftie?
Well, I went to the same high school as them. Jason, I think, was a year younger than me, I believe. And I didn't know them well, but they lived maybe a block away from my first house that I lived in until second grade.
Wow.
So I walked to school with Jason at one point. I don't remember it. People tell me that happened. And unfortunately, my football scouting ability wasn't nearly as refined, so I couldn't predict the level of success that they had. But I do think it's extremely cool how proud they are of Cleveland Heights,
yeah,
where we all grew up. And you know, their podcast refers to the Heights,
mm-hmm,
and they still spend time there. They still go back there. It's a special community, and I think it's very cool how much they're proud of that.
As a Cleveland kid, did you have any favorite players from their franchise growing up on the Cleveland baseball team?
There was a lot to choose from. There were multiple Hall of Famers that played there in the mid to late 90s. My favorite was Kenny Lofton.
Oh, the best.
The best.
Love, yes. Kenny Lofton. That's a great answer. Oh, man, I'm so happy to hear that. I saw that your favorite shows were Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. I'm in the middle of doing the dorkiest thing possible, which is rewatching Better Call Saul, stopping before it reaches the Breaking Bad timeline, watching Breaking Bad, and then going back and watching Better Call Saul. My wife and I are super dorks when it comes to this. So what is it about those shows that stood out and made them some of your favorite?
The attention to detail, I think, is really something that made those shows from great to, in my opinion, maybe the best of all time. The stories are incredible. The characters are so nuanced and real and incredible. But really, the attention to detail of every shot. And I'm not a film guy. And when it stands out to me, the level of care that's put into every single shot throughout the entire show, the color schemes and the symbolism of that sort of thing, it really blows me away.
Makes sense. As someone who cares about the attention to detail on the baseball side, that you would care about that there. Last two questions. If you could give a TED Talk on any topic that wasn't baseball, what would that be?
I'm fascinated by decision sciences and decision making and biases. I don't know that I'm knowledgeable enough to give the very best TED Talk, but I think I could give kind of the baseline level stuff. And I think it's fascinating things that, when understood, even on a baseline level, can lead to better quality of life for really anybody who wants to think about it.
Love that. And finally, what is the best advice you've ever received?
Make your boss's job easier. If you can make your boss's job easier, you will be given more opportunities, you will be given more chances to make a real impact, and then it's up to you to take advantage of that.
That's good advice for anybody listening to this podcast. Peter Bendix, thank you so much. I know I took more of your time than I said I would. Thanks, John Eric. And I really appreciate it. Thanks, and hope to have you back here on Miami Mic'd Up sometime soon.
Thanks for having me.